Well, hello. How's everybody doing? Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Here we go. Let's get this out of the way here. All right. Good. Let's try to keep you alive here. We've got the perfect time slot up against the perfect other conference. Yeah, the hardcore. But I really appreciate you guys all coming out for our little thing here. My name is Lonnie Buchanan. I'm the Director of Enterprise Architecture for Intermountain Healthcare. This gentleman right here on my right hand, this is Mr. T.J. Harrison. He is an enterprise architect specializing in telehealth and teleservices for Intermountain Healthcare. We got a presentation about rock on. So first of all, let me tell you something about T.J. He has worked really, really hard on this slide deck, and I'm pretty much winging it, right? Excellent. That sounds perfect. Okay, so first of all, let me ask you guys. What happens now is Microsoft. See, my audio guy just left. This is where the Microsoft guys get real nervous because you see I'm not behind there anymore because I don't want this to be like a regular presentation or anything. So we'll try to be a little bit interactive a little bit. So let me ask you guys something. How many people here have ever been sprayed by a skunk? There you go. How many people in here have been sprayed by a skunk more than twice? Yeah. Now, what does getting sprayed by a skunk have to do with healthcare? In particular, telehealthcare. It stinks, okay? And that is the state of most current telehealthcare today in the United States, okay? I just got off a phone call just a few minutes ago discussing this. See how I just pace and I make everybody nervous? Isn't that great? And most of my problems have nothing to do with technology because the technology's there. You can just make it happen. Okay. Most of my problems come around regulations and getting people to play well with each other in security, and getting all the vendors and everybody in the right place at the right time. So we wanted to come out today and talk a little bit about some of the things that we've got going on in the world today, and make sure that we kind of convey some of the things that we've got coming up with a little bit of excitement. So first of all, are you going to push me through? Excellent. This is perfect. Intermountain Healthcare. So we've been around for a little while. We're based in Utah. We have about 38,000 employees, 23 hospitals, 100-plus facilities. We have 1,000-plus physicians. The basic healthcare system, which is the first one up there, came into fruition or came in around 1975 with the hospital systems. We introduced our insurance wing in 1984, which is Select Health. And I want to say they're at what? How much are they at right now?
635,000 or 670,000.
670,000 members right now underneath that. Our medical group, which was our physicians, primarily came in around 1994. We have our own home health. We have our own air wing. We're a truly integrated system. Because of that, we get to do some unique things, things that are a little bit different. So in my world, I oversee architecture and telehealth development. About 6 months ago, I was tasked, didn't have a development team or anything, and I was tasked with actually building out a telehealth response. We had done some stuff, some demo stuff in our labs, and actually we decided to go live with it. So everything that we're going to show you is up, productional, and running, and was built in less than 6 months, okay? And that includes hiring the staff. There was no staff in place at that time either. It was strictly coming out of the labs. Now, what you saw prior to that was a video that gentleman in the video is our CTO, Mr. Mark Probst, and that was based out of our transformation lab. Up until about 4 years ago, I was the chief architect for Select Health, and our CTO asked me to come over and take over enterprise architecture. So at that point, there was he and I and a couple of other guys, and we kind of had a little broom closet and some soldering irons, and both of us have an electronics background. Since then, we have built the multimillion-dollar facility that we call the Transformation Lab that you've seen the pictures of. Yes, we do have mills. Yes, we do build our own devices in there. Yes, we all own multiple patents in there. We have built some really fascinating things. We have an integrated circuit printing system. We do the plastic mold, we do mold injection. We also do 3D printing. You've seen that watch spinning around. That is a hologram. We brought that one out of Europe. And so those are some of the things that we've got. It's been quite a ride. But what keeps me, everybody always asks that. You ever notice that? You ever have somebody ask you that question? How many people, because I like the interaction stuff. I come back out around here like this. How many people have people say, What keeps you up at night? You ever heard that question? What keeps you up at night? What do you worry about? And I'm like, why do you even worry about that? You want to know what keeps me up at night? I'll tell you what keeps me up at night. Here's what keeps me up at night. The World Health Care Organization says that in 2012, their numbers predict that 6.6 million children die a year under the age of five. That keeps me up at night. Because 3.3 million of those died under situations where there was something that could have saved their lives. And in most cases, they're technology-based. That's what keeps me up at night. Okay? I am in the business of saving babies. There you go, you're an IT guy. Yeah, I'm an IT guy. I make technology happen. Every time a physician walks into that EMR and performs an operation, I am in that room with him. Now, I may not physically be in there, but I'm in there in that equipment. I'm in there in every electron flowing through that electricity to make sure that he can do what he needs to do. Okay? I am in the business of saving babies. So saving babies is a big deal for me. Now, I'm probably the last of the bleeding hearts. The other thing I wanted to do is I wanted you to leave this meeting with something in your head. And I was like, well, what am I going to tell them yet? Remember whenever you were little? Remember somebody would say a song and you would repeat the song over and over again and you say, how irritating is that? You remember this song? It says, I'd like to teach the world to sing in perfect harmony. You remember that? It used to be the Coke commercial. Now that's stuck in your head because I'm the last of the bleeding hearts. And I really believe that commercial. I really believe that there is still opportunity in the world today to do some of these things. I don't believe in starvation. I think that we can fix that problem. I believe we can drastically reduce the mortality rate among children in the world. I honestly believe that. Okay? And that's why I'm in this business. And that's why I'm doing what I'm doing. Now, innovation laboratories. So we've got a high demand for quality. But we needed technology advances. And we needed to be able to demand for sustainable costs. So we also had a need for innovation solutions. And so what we did is we created the laboratories themselves. And within the laboratories, we're able to join with partners, join with physicians, join with people in the organization. Anybody in my organization that has an idea has a place to take it to. Okay? If they have something, we have a patent office that will stand up that patent. We have the lawyers that will put that patent through the copyright process, and you will actually become an owner of part of that patent along with us. We are that committed to it. You bring it into my labs, we have electrical engineers, we have mechanical engineers, we have people on staff that can make that thing happen. That's how dedicated we are to this. Okay? Give me another slide. Okay. Development focus. One of the other things that we didn't really talk about, especially in the software applications area, we also have a thing called the Homer Warner Center. It is a center for research that is staffed with informaticists where they're doing all kinds of genomic research and all kinds of big data stuff and everything. We work very directly with them. So sometimes we have these people come up and they have these ideas about genes and things like that, and so we push in through the process. And so they're able to bring that forward also. Like we talked a little bit earlier about different technologies around the hardware and healthcare processes. And then also we've got technology partnerships. Within our laboratories, we have partnerships with many different vendors that... do we have a slide with the vendors' names? We don't have one open. And so... these vendors, in many situations, come in with ideas where either, one, that they need to put it in a clinical situation. My office is 400 feet away from the largest hospital on the West Coast, okay, 800 feet away from that Homer Warner Center. Okay, it's within walking distance. We have a bridge between our office and the hospital itself that we just walk across the bridge. So that puts that into perspective for the vendors. The other thing sometimes happens with vendors is sometimes you have vendors that want to work with another vendor, but because of different regulations or because of certain NDAs, they can't do it. We offer an environment where all of us can come together under different legal agreements and then create something together. So it's totally new. It's a different thing. And we've been very, very happy with what we've got going on. Once again... Intermountain Healthcare, most of Intermountain Healthcare is actually, let's see,
mostly right there? Population of Utah.
You'll see the little red dots. That is primarily the population of Utah right there, around the Salt Lake area. Almost everybody's in one place. You see this? This is mostly desert. Rocks and desert, but there's people that live out in that rocks and desert, and there's not a lot of physicians that want to go out there. Okay. So telemedicine and telehealth became very, very critical for us as we began to explore the possibility, because we constantly have people. It's interesting, no matter what the disease is, it can happen anywhere, okay? It's not just happening in large areas and everything, but I don't have the specialist out in here. So telehealth became very, very critical for us, and we started looking at how could we reach them and how could we get people out in that space. What's our next one here? That's where we're just talking about some of the rural physicians. So we've got hospitals across the entire state, or facilities across the entire state, and we also have a major Native American reservation that exists also in the state of Utah. So these become very, very critical for us. As we begin looking, here's another thing that is very unique about the Utah area. Most of you, how many people here live in a very rural area? Anybody live in a very rural? Let me tell you a little bit about a very rural area. The first thing most people realize in a very rural area is you may not have internet. That's pretty shocking. Huh? Most of you kind of take your internet for granted. You may not have internet in many of these places. There are some places you may not have electricity even. We have situations like that. Yes, it still does happen in America. Okay, remember I talked about saving babies? Okay, third world nations aren't that far away. Okay, and I can tell you stories that will make you cringe. This limited infrastructure is very, very critical for us. Okay, just to get a line down in some of these places, we may have to go through co-ops, we may have to bring special grants, we may have to do all kinds of very unique things to get to these hospitals in some of these areas. So we don't have the luxury of running dedicated pipelines for video connections. Okay, everything that we do, we have to take into account every bit that's shoving down that line. And let me tell you something else. You may not know this, and I can't remember exactly where I get my facts from. Sometimes I just pull them out of my head and throw them out there to see if you think they're actually real or if you're actually paying attention. They recently announced 60% of everything that's running up and down the internet right now are bots. Do you know that? You're only pushing, only 40% of the internet means anything. Okay, that's a pretty scary thing. So there's 60% is bots. So if 60% of my dedicated line is being clogged up with analytics, I've only got 40%, so I just channeled it down some more. By the way, sometimes try to watch Netflix on 256K DSL. Yes, they are still out there. Okay, and they're in such rural areas, you may not even be able to pick up satellite reception. You're very, very limited. So you've got to be very, very careful what you're pushing down. Now, when we talk about that, we're still wanting to get video. We're still wanting to get audio. We still want to do that type of interconnectivity. Okay, because I still got to get face-to-face with a physician. And so we've got to be very, very careful about how we do that. Now, oh, we do have one of our pictures in here. So here are some of the partners that we've got running right now. And you'll see our buddies Microsoft right over here. Yay. Let's give it up for Stephen in the house. All right. Thank you for having us out here. Had to throw that out there. Okay. They'll pay for supper later. It's okay. Is that on there? That's not on there, is it? My man Darren on the audio, I have to take it back. This is kind of interesting. This is a company that we've partnered with very heavily. They're called XI3. If you were at CES just recently, you would have seen these. These are the guys that put it in the water, submerged it in the water, and ran the computer. Okay, they're one of our partners. They build these boxes for us. Every hospital room, and Mr. T.J. Harrison over here, he's going to go in detail about some of the stuff. But this is what I'm running most of my stuff off in the hospital system. So I just want to drive this home one more time, okay? Just one more time. This is live. I'm not showing you vaporware, okay? I'm doing this right now, okay? I'm saving babies on this technology right now, okay? This is our camera. These cameras we've dispersed into the rooms. That's a 30 by. It's a very, very high quality camera. Now, that's not the only camera that will run across the system. The way we've got it engineered, we can use multiple cameras in there, but that's just the primary one we've got. And obviously, Link. Link is our major telecom. We consider Link to be a platform. Okay, so I know a lot of people, I've had this discussion with a lot of people. A lot of people say, well, it's just an application. I'm running stuff on it. Okay? It's more than just a codec for me. It's a platform itself. And so we utilize it and we treat it as a platform. You know, just like Windows is kind of a platform, it's an OS platform and you can plug other things into it. I can do the same thing with Link. So be very aware of that. And just because I'm not in all cases plugging applications, I'm plugging hardware in, it's still supporting that hardware. So it is actually, by technical definition, it is a platform. So let's see what one of these things look like. This is actually our call center. I was talking to somebody earlier who said, do you mean you actually have? We have a Link call center that's active. Now, we took the picture, nobody was sitting there. In a regular day, this is all packed, and we have people over here, and they're answering the phone calls as they come in, the live calls from Link. But this is our call center. We built this out. And remember, this is all 6 months. You can do this too, okay? Go ahead, TJ.
This call center is staffed by nurses and physicians.
Yeah.
I mean, this isn't, I mean, these are actual people providing care over that.
Yeah. Yeah, so I keep going back. If you have the backing from your management system, you can do this. It's actually available. This is a patient room, and if you'll notice, I don't have a pointer. If you'll look right underneath the TV, you'll see that box. There it is. Look at that. That's at the end of my finger. That's technology. Yep. That's the box right there. So you say, how do you keep people from hacking it? Well, we've got it locked down and secure. There's no keyboard on it. We push the updates out to it, and I won't steal any of the thunder. Mr. Harrison will go through all that. The TV is integrated into the system. You'll see the camera up here alongside it, and there's actually a microphone associated with it. This is live right here. Okay. I'm doing it. Yeah, right up here. And because it's such a high-end camera, I think it's a little large. You know, it's a little bit big. Because it rotates, it can zoom, it's a 30x camera. But we've got some other ones that are smaller. We've got some that we're looking at right now that are mobile, that we could actually deploy mobile. But the quality, TJ can tell us more about it. Why don't you just take it, TJ?
All right, 99% of the rooms we have, that camera's mounted into the ceiling, so it only sticks out about 4 inches. This is one of the unique rooms where something in the ceiling, whether it was a hard ceiling or not enough space, prevented us from actually mounting it there. So we do a wall mount on this one. The idea for our camera placement is we put it as close to the TV as possible so that when you're having a face-to-face conversation with a physician, it actually looks face-to-face. You don't want to be having a conversation, your physician's looking over here, but you're sitting over here, right? Or the patient's not looking at you. I mean, that's we kind of took it from that perspective where everything we designed in the system, we started with what does the patient see? What's that experience for the patient? Because ultimately, that's what this is all about, is the patient experience.
Is that a hospital room?
Yes, that is an actual hospital room with our setup mounted.
Yeah. When we're done, I'm going to steal some thunder.
All right.
When we're done, we have 2,800 normal patient rooms that this will be actually implemented across 23 hospitals. Okay. That does not include our EMRs. It doesn't include all our other. It doesn't include our home health distribution. That's just the primary thrust. ICUs also. So 2,800 of this particular setup right here. Okay. There's what she looks like. Okay. Now, of course, you don't see each screen at the same time. You know, we just put them all on the same thing. This is actually it is a interface that's built on top of Link. Link is used as a platform. Remember I told you? This is the interactive part. Yes, we remember. All right. And so I'm not going to go into a lot of detail, but I'll let TJ take care of that.
So the idea with this, it's an application that we wrote around Link. We tried to keep the user experience as customized as possible across all of our experiences. We have a main services bar over that you see over there on the left that brings up the People Finder, which that button brings up the Link contact, the Link client, so you can see all your contact lists. The next one we have a call room to where you can bring up your incoming queue to see what calls are in that queue and waiting for it. Remember, these are doctors and nurses sitting in a call center waiting to take calls. A clinician or a patient can punch a button on the side of their bed or a PC in the room and drop themselves right into a call. In our environment, if you're part of our critical care, meaning if you're in an ICU or some other point that requires instant attention, you jump right to the front of the service. Otherwise, it's first come, first serve. From a call center perspective, we also have a location finder, which you can see here, where each one of our enabled rooms you can dial into. In this case, shows all of our different ICUs at one of our particular hospitals. And then we wrote a room control outside of Link that allows us to control the TV, the volume, and the camera controls all remotely. We wrote this outside of Link because a lot of what we're doing involves multi-party conversations, and once you start doing multi-party conversations, you don't have the ability to control that camera anymore. The way we do it now, anyone in that conversation can control that camera. So if you're speaking with a specialist who wants to look at how bloodshot the patient's eyes are, he can zoom that camera in on the patient. When if you have somebody else that wants to look at a blotch on the skin, they can click the reset button or move the camera back to where they want to see on their arm or their face or their neck or something like that. Very simple to use application. It's an easy interface. Everyone that we've given it to has been able to adapt to it relatively easily. As Lonnie said, we are building a platform here, and as more of our services come online, services that are being designed right now, we add them to the base application. More buttons will pick up, things like that, based on who you are. You can be an administrator, that's going to have tiles all over the place. If you're only specific to one service, you're only going to see the one button.
And remember, when I look at this, this is uber simple. In my head, there's so much more stuff that we've got going on that we're adding to this. And so what you're seeing is just the basic premise of what's coming and what can be done, okay? And I know a lot of people went, wow, that's cool. This is just the beginning, okay? This is just the very fundamental stuff that you're going to see coming. Critical care. So you want to talk a little bit about critical care?
So critical care medicine is one of the pilot services that we started out with, and what it focuses on is treating ERs and ICUs, specifically ICUs. There are patients that have to be watched constantly. When a patient is transferred into the ICU, they typically have to have a care plan and a physician and a nurse aware of that care plan within 60 minutes. It's a challenge in a busy hospital. You look in downtown Salt Lake at our flagship hospital, that's a lot of patients coming inside and out of that ICU. Rural facility, not so bad, but the idea is that we can supplement it if they do get overloaded with our virtual care center, which you saw a picture of, and the doctors in that center do that. It provides proactive rounding for the physicians. They can dial into that room, check on the patient, especially at night. When you're in an ICU or any hotel or any hospital room, for that matter, at night, you're constantly being monitored whether or not you know it. Nurses will come in, check on you. Doctors come in and check on you. They want to see if you're moving throughout the night. This system allows a non-intrusive way of doing that. So, you know, a lot of times a nurse will knock in, turn the lights on, check on you, turn the lights off, and walk out, and a lot of times that will wake you up. This system, there's no knocking. We just come in, we look at you, make sure you're rolling around, make sure your levels are okay, and then we pop out of the room. Easy peasy for the patient. We do compliance reviews. We have specialists who oversee care provided at a facility to make sure that they're, you know, when we have sepsis patients, to make sure they're compliant with all the regulations that come down from the state and the federal governments around treating sepsis. Ventilated assisted pneumonia. When, you know, your grandma goes in the hospital because she's got pneumonia and she's got ventilators all over, that's a very special care that has to happen with those ventilators. This system allows us to provide that care. One particular area is in the rural facilities where they may only see a patient like that once or twice a month. They don't get the special, I shouldn't say they don't get the special care, they get the care. It is those physicians and clinicians don't necessarily do it day in and day out, so they don't learn the intricacies with the machines. This system allows them to come in and assist those physicians and clinicians from our urban areas and provide that specialty to them. It's one of the things that we're really targeting is how do we take our specialists in an urban area and bring it out to the areas where they don't have them. That nearest physician may be, or that nearest specialist may be 3 hours away from them. You know, there's a lot involved in that. Stroke services. This is a very important one because right now the typical process is when you present to a hospital with an ER with a stroke, you have roughly 4 hours from the time you first present with symptoms. After 4 hours, your chances of recovering from that stroke diminish rapidly. If you present to a hospital in a rural area, the process prior to the implementation of our teleservices was they just put you in an ambulance, started treating you, and sent you off to a specialty center. Now we can come in, we can look at you, run you through some speech tests, look at your eyes, see how your face is responding, and decide, okay, are you really having a stroke? Are you okay there? Can we start care now? Do we need to transfer you? Saves you money, saves us money. It's an easier win for the patient. They may not have to be transferred. If they do, we're more prepared. We're able to accurately keep track of how much anti-blood clotting medication that they've been giving, which matters. You know, how much you're given over a certain amount of time can lead to a better outcome. You know, as it stands right now, 5% of our customer or 5% of our patients are monitored correctly because of our rural natures. You know, you don't see the specialist there, so a lot of times the protocols around them are there. It's hard to stay on top of it. Our stroke services will increase that compliancy up into the 90%. So we've already had quick wins with that. Crisis evaluation and telepsychiatry. This is a really important one for our rural services. When you need to seek a psychologist or some sort of mental health physician, you would have to drive to, you know, what we would do is have you drive to one of our clinics or one of our hospitals and go into a room there and see a specialist there. Now, that specialist may travel between three hospitals in a rural region, so, you know, they have a lot of patients to see in a very short time frame. With teleservices and the adaption of Link across our rural environments, we've been able to extend those, provide more meetings for our patients, and reduce the stress and the workload on our physicians. This is one that our physicians really have promoted. And I mean, they've created more demand. This service alone has created more demand than we can keep up with because of how much time it saved our physicians. The driving time alone is worth it to them. They don't have to spend 3 or 4 hours driving to hospitals all day. Transplant services. We have, when you're a patient that's on a transplant list, there are a lot of things that go on. You're meeting with doctors, you're meeting with clinicians, your physicians are meeting with physicians who are doing the transplant, who are meeting with the physicians that are taking the organ out of the body that's donating. There's a lot of coordination that goes on, and the way it works today is very cumbersome and difficult to get everybody organized. So usually what they do, once a quarter, they set up across a week to get everybody together to come in and sit down and meet and talk. And schedules are hard. You know, doctors have very little time. What we've done here is we've taken the concept of a Link meeting and bringing physicians and patients across our organization, across our specialty centers, and across the country together. Sorry, I have notes here. Let me.
He does have notes. He didn't wing it.
Yeah. So one of the rural facilities that we have sees on average about 9 to 10 patients a month for this. Getting everybody coordinated for these transplant services, we had to fly them across the state of Utah to get to this rural facility to meet. That's a huge expense to send doctors and nurses to meet with these patients. A lot of times we can't fly the patients to us. We have to go to them. The service allows us for them to stay in the comfort of their home and still meet with our physicians in their clinics. They are happy patients for that. Another one we have online is language interpretation. Medical translation or interpretation, let me say this. Medical interpretation is a very unique skill. Everybody knows what translators are. They're translating English into Spanish or doing American Sign Language. When it comes to medical interpretation, translation is minor in the skill set. Medical interpretation is all about listening to the doctor, listening to the patient, reading forms, understanding the context of what is being said and what it means, and relaying that back to a patient who can't understand the physician. A very unique skill set. It takes years to learn how to do this. The biggest problem we have is we have a lot of languages that are not based in Latin when most of your medical terminology is. That is where interpretation really comes in key. You know.
So
on this particular slide, one of the things that's very interesting about our demographics is in the state of Utah, federal regulations require that you present documentation and interpretation to the patients based on the majority of the languages within that demographic or within that area, correct? In the state of Utah, our number two spoken language that we're required to present in is Navajo. So we have to have interpretive services for the Navajo Nation. And so that within itself introduces all kinds of idiosyncrasies because the way that the language is interpreted into medical terms. So it's very difficult for us to find translators that are qualified in this particular area. What do you got?
Federation with Link, where we can federate with other environments, allow us to find third-party software as a service interpreters, bring them in through edge servers, and have an audio-video conversation. You go to one of our hospitals, especially a busy hospital, you could be waiting an hour for somebody who's an expert in sign language to come to your room. This is because our biggest hospital has, what, 600, 700 beds?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a lot of patients to have in a single hospital. Interpreters are, once again, medical interpreters are very hard to get a hold of. When you have an interpreter ready, you may not have your physician ready, and this leads to a lot of frustration among our physicians as well as our patients because there's that constant organization that needs to happen. With the use of Federation, we've been able to go out to a third-party interpreter service and bring them in and reduce that hour wait time to now 30 seconds. So the doctor is in there. He's ready to go. The patient's in there. The patient's family can be with them. They can all have a conversation so that that patient understands what's happening. That's something that we get with Link. Prior to Link, every vendor you went to had their own solution. So it's specialty hardware here and configurations on your network here. Oh, and you got to pay an extra money for this hardware, and we have to update it every year, and you have no control over it. And a lot of times you're only taking it out when you need it. It can sit in a closet, so the batteries die. Staff don't remember to plug things in. There's a lot of things about that hardware that make it difficult to use on a routine basis. Because you saw the equipment that we're putting in that room, we can run Link, bring them in over Link, and there's nothing to maintain. They punch a button. They say, I need to speak with a Spanish interpreter. Up, they pop on the screen. Very simple and easy to use. A really good quick win. Because interpretation is such a hard skill to find, we now have a pool of interpreters across our organization that we can create a call group and Link for. So let's use our interpreters to provide that care across the organization. When we are busy and don't have it, we go to the third-party service. What happens when we have our interpreters sitting here? Well, because we're using the extensibility of Link and that federation, we can now resell our services if we want to. These are the possibilities that we have with this ecosystem that don't exist in existing technologies. And this particular one has been a great one for the business because of the high demand for all of the languages that we have in Utah.
So I think we're just starting to talk about some of these different ones. I want you to kind of get the idea of where we're going and what we're pushing. We're a nonprofit organization, but at the heart of our organization, our underlying stance is that we want to revolutionize and change healthcare as an industry. Okay. As soon as this conference is over, I fly to HIMSS and give the same type of spiel that this is what we're trying to do. I think this is the type of technology that we like to grab onto and hang on to that allow for us to transform healthcare as a whole.
Neonatal intensive care. This is Lonnie's favorite one. This is a service where, as he likes to say babies.
Saving babies right here.
This service highlights that. Within 3 days of making this service live, we had a baby present at one of our hospitals with a pneumothorax, which what that means is that the lungs in their cavity can't expand and that baby can't breathe. When a baby presents with that, the baby was born that way, and when that baby was born, you have 6 minutes to recover or we lose that child. When it happens in a rural facility, they don't have the neonatologist on staff to do that care. It's hard. What they do, I mean, the physicians are trained, but they don't see it often enough for them to be really on top of the ball. They know what it is. I mean, as we can all attest here, for the things that we know how to do day in and day out, we don't have to think about it. Well, this is something that somebody that sees these babies in a rural physician facility do. They have to remember how to do this procedure. You got a 6-minute window. There's a lot of coordination that has to happen in that 6 minutes. Very time-crunching and very time-sensitive issue. The process prior to teleservices has been to get a neonatologist or a neonatal clinic nurse on the phone and walk through that procedure. You know, they're describing on the baby where they're at, what they feel, how the baby's positioned, you know, where the belly button is compared to where the arm is. That's hard to translate over the phone. I mean, it's a service that typically, on average, would take 4 minutes to do over a phone. Implementing teleservices, we have a doctor that can get onto Link, or a nurse, a neonatologist nurse that can get onto Link, see that baby, see them as they're drawing the needle down or the syringe down, say, yep, right there, push it in, okay, stop. We've reduced that time from 4 minutes to a minute and a half. That's a great outcome. This is a service that within 3 days saved babies' lives. And that's what Lonnie's about.
3 days, okay? Let's just think about that for a minute. Within 3 days of this going live, we saved a baby's life. Did the system pay for itself or not? You tell me. 3 days live and I save a baby. Okay? That's big. Okay? That's what we're talking about with the technology.
I can't stress this enough. It's the rural care physicians that really need the support. They don't have the specialty support. Craniofacial services. When you see this, think of cleft palate, cleft lips, speech impairments, things like that. Intermountain Healthcare, we have a children's facility called Primary Children's Medical Center. It's a facility that is focused on treating kids. That facility sees on average 450 patients a year with cleft disorders, some sort of birth defect where they have to monitor these patients. Our facility is the only pediatric facility that provides this between Colorado and California. We have coverage for 5 states around us: Idaho, Wyoming, California, Nevada, Arizona, New Mexico. Yeah.
Number 5.
The craniofacial services is a specialty. It's not just a single pediatrician. There's nurses. There's social workers. You know, having a face defect isn't harmful to a kid just socially. I mean, it's those kind of things that we have to take into account with craniofacial services. The patients that are not in the native area, that are not within Salt Lake, when you are a patient with craniofacial issues, you need follow-up care. You are checked on routinely. The first few months after surgery, it's a monthly thing. They're on out, that time steps, but it's something that you have to continually follow for 18 or 19 years, just to make sure that the treatment, the speech therapy, is progressing the way it should be, and that any changes to your care plan can be accounted for. Right now, what's happening, because we cover 5 states, when we bring you in for that appointment, we have to bring you to us. We can't go to you. So that means we have to make sure that when you come to us, the schedules for all of your clinicians are open to provide that care. And that's a very difficult thing when you're treating 450 patients a year. It's very little time to coordinate across all your physicians. Teleservices through Link and Skype allow us to extend our border to you anywhere you're at. And that's really the benefit of this system. How come it's so extensible that we can extend it beyond our borders, bring our physicians to you, and provide you with the care that makes you feel comfortable that you're going to get adequate care? Rural care managers. So this is, as you can kind of see, it's all about, what we started with was all about extending our high-tech care into rural areas. Rural care managers specialize in following up with patients after they've had some sort of surgery or some sort of treatment plan in the urban area. Now they've gone on to the maintenance phase or the life phase at their home, and they still need the follow-up care, but they don't necessarily need to come into the hospital. Like our transplant services, this was another thing where we would bring you to one of our facilities in a rural region, you would meet with a care manager, and then go home. That care manager, a single care manager, can cover 3 clinics over a 150-mile geographical area. It's a lot of area of traveling, and they're doing this all the time. This allows us to keep those care managers at a single facility and bring you in from any of our facilities or from your home and have that follow-up care. If you're a patient that is on an LVAD, a left ventricular assist device, kind of a way, a stopgap measure till you get a heart transplant, right? There's very important care conditions around that, how you treat it, how you clean it, how you connect it, how you disconnect it, how you keep it on your system, how you keep it plugged in, you know, what the battery levels are. Those kind of things require special care and routine follow-up to make sure that if you're not going to have a problem if something goes on with that device. And if there is a problem with that device, how can we get you the care and get you to a facility to where we can assist you better? This is something that Link has done for us to where we can, once again, get beyond our borders and into your home and help you when you need that help. Even if it's just a few questions, you know, hey, the machine's beeping. Is it okay? The fan is going a little high. Are we okay? Yeah, you're okay. Okay, you're cleaning things okay. You're disconnecting things okay. The hoses aren't kinked. It's that kind of things that we have to watch out for, because the more we follow with that, the less frustration a patient's going to have in one of our facilities. So this is, it's not American Airlines, it's not Alcoholic Anonymous. This is about being able to, what I like to call the four A's. Anyone from anywhere, anytime, on any device. That's our goal with this system. And that's a big mindset change for a hospital. We're very secured about our data. We're very protective of our information. And this sort of system is very disruptive to that, because the idea that we may not necessarily know who you are when you come into our system, but we know that we need to treat you, or that you could be coming from a device, your cell phone in your pocket, or a tablet you just bought 20 minutes ago. You know, we don't control that. How do we know that any information we exchange with you is going to be safe? This really changes the focus of what we have to think about. You know, the things that we're working on, contact centers, you know, how we can extend those remote interpreters, those medical interpreters, and resell those services to other facilities. The Skype integration with video changes the game for us. That's the challenge right now. Skype's audio-based. Video will be coming up here in a few months. Really enhances the platform and what we can do with the services. HTML5, making it plug-in agnostic, will help us as well. You know, we don't want to train patients, oh, you got to click this executable first so you can join this meeting. And we just want you to click on a link, type your name in, click a button, and you're speaking to somebody. We need it as simple as possible for you. That's where we're investigating. Link kiosks. You come into a pharmacy and you find out that your medication that you need to get refilled every 90 days, you're out of refills. Your pharmacist is going to call your physician or fax your physician. Wait, what are you doing? You're going to have to come back another day. What if you could walk up to a kiosk right next to it, click a button, and talk to a physician who can look over your medical records? If it's something that you need, if it's a, so, what is the term? Lifetime or lifestyle disorder where you need that medication, heart hypertension or something like that, and you need that medication, they can click a button, refill it right there for you, let the pharmacist fill it, you won't have to go anywhere. This is something that the pharmacy is really demanding, because it's frustrating for the patients to come in and say, well, you're out of refills. Sorry, we'll have to wait till your doctor gets back to us. We don't want to do that. Our pharmacists don't want to do that, and our physicians don't want to be bothered with that, because it's often they're treating other patients. They don't want to stop and fill out a prescription. Link kiosks will be able to save that. Another thing we're looking at is virtual clinics. How do we provide the care that you would get in a clinic to you through the internet or through Skype, where you can speak with a physician for whatever reason you want? You don't have to come into a clinic or facility anymore, sit there for a half an hour, wait, read a magazine, whatever stupid TV's on, go into a room, and now have dumber magazines and no TV. I mean, the virtual clinics, you can still be in your own environment, still listen to your own music, and still do whatever while you're waiting for a physician. You want to watch Netflix? Great. You can. A physician will be with you shortly. We'll come in. We'll have a nurse come in, check on you virtually every couple minutes, make sure you're okay, make sure you're still there, ready to go. Link web apps. Get away from that client aspect again. You know, get away from those plugins, things that we're trying to do there. Mobile phones. You want a doctor, you want to get a doctor wherever you're at. I'm in Vegas. I want to talk to my doctor. I've got something on my arm. I can show him on my arm with my iPhone. Why don't I have that option? And then setting aside link meeting rooms. In our transplant services is a good example where link meeting rooms can change for us. You know, rather than bringing everybody in, we can set up rooms at every facility where it's all there. All the information's there. They run in and punch a button. When they're done, we self-contain it, put it on a SharePoint, refer to that patient later, have a bundled package of documents, everything that was discussed, all of everybody's notes, the presentation, a video of everybody chatting, all in a single package thanks to Link Meeting Room. Those are the kind of things that we really are striving after, which we'll start integrating over the next year. I mean, contact centers is going to be a huge one for us. That's going to have a lot of work for us.
So I think one of the things that we really want to push is the interactivity and the way that we're changing healthcare away from the way a lot of technologies have moved from. So let me ask you a question here. How many of you are children of the 70s or the 80s? Okay, remember when we used to play with each other? Remember that? And your mom would throw you out in the yard and you had to make friends with everybody. You remember that? Yeah, you had to go outside. There you go. That's a shocking thing. Now, I know that I can't read emotion in an email. You get an email. You ever get an email and you're like, oh my goodness, this person is just furious with me. I cannot believe this. And then you call them up and you say, I'm so sorry. What did I do to offend you? And then they go, I'm not mad at you. Because the email is cold, okay? Texts are cold. They're callous. What we're doing through this type of interaction is we're bringing people back together. And we're getting people to look at each other and talk to each other and actually interact with each other like what I'm doing right now. Remember I told you I don't like to be behind that. I like to be out here. I'm winging a presentation, you know, and so that gives us this interaction. So now we've all met each other. Now I don't know all your names, but we're all friends now, see? And so you can stop by and we're going to be somewhere after this somewhere and I have a bright purple shirt on, so you know it's me. And so if you have questions and stuff, feel free to come and talk to me. But I think the biggest thing is it was somewhere between when we were kids and we grew up, we've lost that. We kind of got cold with each other and we kind of got callous with each other, and that's not good. And it's not good for us as a people or where we're going in the world. And this puts a person's face. It puts a real person. When I save babies, I'm saving real babies. I'm not saving numbers on a piece of paper. I'm saving real little kids that are going to grow up and do wonderful things in this world. And I think every child needs a chance to be able to do that. And that's why we're pushing for this type of technology. I make no money off of Microsoft. I make nothing. It's just a technology. But I did this in 6 months. I didn't even have staff. This is all rolled out, and people are happy with it. And this is just the beginning of this type of thing. So if you're looking to do this type of thing, I'm here to encourage you more than any other thing in the world is to go do it. Get away from the text and all the stuff that bring you down. Take a few minutes every day. Take a few minutes every day and just try to do something to make this world just a little bit better. And I think that if we all got on the same base and we all tried to do that, man, we could make some awesome stuff happen in this world. So with that said, and on behalf of my friend Mr. T.J. Harrison there, I want to thank you very, very much for taking a few minutes and coming and spending some time with us. We'll be here. We'll take questions. If you have questions, we'll be more than glad to visit with you. We have business cards if you need to follow up. If you, I don't know, if you want to Skype with me sometime, I'll Skype with you, okay?
It's an even better.
Yeah, yeah. So, questions. I have a question right here. And wait, what's your name?
My name's Ansley. I'm with Smart Technology.
Ansley.
Oh, yeah, we've met.
Okay. Oh, I like the South. I am a non-profit organization. That is a beautiful thing, okay? That is an absolutely beautiful thing because I'm not under the pressure to generate income. Do I have the facilities to generate income? Yes, we do have those types of things in the world, but within our organization. But you have to understand, my leaders have directly empowered me to start changing healthcare. That is first and foremost of what we do. It makes us very unique in the business. I'm not, believe it or not, I'm not after your dollar.
No, just because I have work you've done. Just like, you know, they're just putting me out there.
Yeah, that's what I want. I want you to embrace that.
It's a shocking thing. It really is. It is. It's a shocking thing. As much work and as effort, and we give this stuff away. To give you an idea, and I don't want to get into the way financials work because that's not what I do. I do technology. But in a nonprofit organization, if we make too much money, we have to give it away. We have to do something with it. So we have to be very careful even in that situation. And that's really, really what we're doing. We're totally committing to make the world a better place. We really are. And that's why I love this job. And you remember at the beginning of the keynote, he came out and he says, "I have the best job in the world." Were you there at the keynote? Did you hear that? And I was like, "No, you don't." You know, because you still got to worry about the bottom line. You still got to worry. I have the best job in the world because I get to focus on that. I get to do what I can do, okay? And I get to do it to people and make their life better because of it. And if I die with just the idea that I've got to make somebody else's life better because of what I did, I'm good. I'm good. I have, yes, so within the labs, I have an FDA specialist. I have, we have compliancy experts. We have legal counsel. We also have purchasing and contract counsel. We have a commercialization unit, and we also have our laboratory specialist that works on nothing but the whole concept of how grants are tied together and who can see what and when can. So everything's under internal research boards and everything's like that. So yes, we have all that. Everything that goes live is completely under compliance. Nothing coming out of my shop, at least that I know of right now, is under any type of trial. Do I have one?
No, he's right. I mean, the benefits of this being audio video under the current regulations today, audio and video isn't considered EPHI or part of a patient record. A physician will describe what goes on in that audio and video, but it itself is not. If we start doing instant messaging or texting, that's a different story. As long as we're not prescribing care over that, you know, saying this is the medication you need to have and this much and this type, that becomes an issue. But with the whiteboarding and things like that, it's whiteboarding, the way that we've used it, is more about giving definitions to words than anything else.
So probably to kind of take that down a little bit of a road, because I know where you're going with that. So in this particular scenario, you're already under the clinical treatment scenario, so you're underneath that protected area. We also have another tangent that we're working on that allows for healthcare outside of the system itself, so you're having to come like an office visit in. And so we have a whole nother, we didn't show that one, but we have a whole nother collaboration board that whenever you hit that, there's certain things that you have to go through, just like if you were walking in through the office, to prove to us who you are. And so one of the nice things about us is because we're very cautious being a nonprofit also. We take what we feel is the letter of the law and always take it above that. That's one of our rules. We always take it higher. So that way, if we actually miss, we fall back to the letter of the law. So we always go higher. So when we released that that particular scenario, we were very, very cautious of making sure that we know exactly who you are, being able to record that information. There's a whole series and steps of things that go behind that. So, yes, sir. Yeah, so here's the beauty of where we're going. So the first thing we needed to do was deploy into the rooms themselves, because we needed to be able to adjust the cameras and the mics and all that. And so in the initial thrust, not everything was in the web interface. As you know, the first thing that we had to use was we had to get a client that was deployed on a machine that could do all those types of things. So we had to start somewhere, and we started with that. Now, what we're looking at right now, obviously, is the mobile device itself. And so with Skype and Link integration, yes, that is there. Can we do it? Yeah, we've been doing it
with the Link clients internally, but it's been more physician-to-physician contact because we don't have a way to do unauthenticated users across the Link client yet. yet.
So we
I imagine we'll have that problem solved in the next few months.
So we were showing this. We have an office that sets in downtown Salt Lake, and TJ and I were down there showing it in one of our business units when it first came out. And we had one of our developers with us. And he was running, he just used a regular laptop with a web camera. He brought it up and was running it. We were running across wireless, across that building's wireless internet connection. We had connected to a hospital that's probably about 50, 60 miles away with their room, and were interacting with them. And TJ pulled up his phone and went live on his phone and come into the interaction. So we had all three of those running in real time at the same time. And remember, no fancy network tricks either.
Now, no QoS, nothing applied to this phase.
Now, I do have, I will tell you one area that I cheat. What I didn't tell you about TJ is he's a network expert. So if we were to run up against those, he would fix them for me very quickly. So, but, so that's a cheating area. Yes, sir?
I came in a little bit late, so I apologize. How did you guys land on LinkedIn? What made you go with LinkedIn?
So what I covered to begin with was I'm the director of enterprise architecture, so all I had was architecture and a whole bunch of architects. And architects sit around, and their whole idea is to establish strategy to business and be able to deploy that. So I'm really, really big in the architecture. But what happened was the organization as a whole had to have something that happened very, very quickly. And sometimes when they have things that have to happen very quickly, they'll bring them to me. And so I work directly for the CTO and the CIO. And they said, we want you to do telehealth services now. Go. Well, the first thing that happened was I knew I needed to get something because I was having people tell me, we need to do our own codec, we need to do all this. And I was like, oh, I don't know what we're going to do. This sounds really bad. We were looking at some different technologies. And this is one for the Microsoft people in the room, okay? This day one, I'd been handed this. I had no team. I had no developers. I didn't even have TJ in the position. I had nothing, okay? I go down. Microsoft had called me and said, hey, we want you to take a look because you guys are going to upgrade from your IM to the next version of Link. I went, oh, okay. So I go down, and they had like four laptops all put together, and they put some headphones on us, and all of a sudden we were linking, and I was like, well, why do I want to go build something because these guys already have it, and I own it. So I went back and I said, we already own this. Why do you guys, well, it doesn't do this. And I said, sure it does. Yeah, it does. It was probably a bad publicity or something. I don't know. I don't know what it was. And so I called them up and they said, well, can you just put stuff on top of it and make the buttons go? I said, well, sure. And so then they said, make it happen. Okay. So I got on the phone. I made operations mad because I wanted to jump. They were going to go live with 2010, which had more servers than the 2013. And so I convinced them to go with the 2013. I went back, and I found some developers. I robbed some developers from some other friends of mine, used to be friends of mine in the organization. And here's what I did. I went looking for people who had the same mindset as me, that really wanted to make a change. And actually, I had found people that had not been given that opportunity. If you look through your organizations, you'll find, if you take the time, this is all about taking time and meeting people. Remember the meeting people thing? You'll find people in your organization that are really, really smart, but they just never get a chance to do it. And so I brought them in and I said, you guys are really, really smart. You can't BS me with this. I know you're really, really smart. Now I'm going to give you the platform. I'm going to give you what you can go from, and now you make it happen. And I don't micromanage them. These guys are smart. They get paid to be smart, okay? And if you make them happy and give them the chance to do it, they'll do wonderful things. I don't call TJ every 15 minutes. I respect what he knows. And we also give him the opportunities because I'm the lab. If he wants to go play with something, he goes and plays with something. He's got something up here. He's just dying to show you that he's been playing with. And I said, go play with it. And he'll show it to you. Show him, TJ.
How many of you have seen this yet?
You know what that is?
This is Google Glass. Within about 4 hours, I was able to run Link on this and have audio-video conversations. Now, it was not easy. I had to do a lot of hacking. Had to call up some Android developer friends of mine to help me figure out how to get Bluetooth keyboards working on it, how to sideload applications. But I was able to do that in a few hours. Now, from an initial 4 hour worth of investment, it shows me that it's possible that I can now tie it into our teleservices with some more development time. There's APIs around the mobile client. Now I just need to figure out how to auto-answer those video calls. So I don't need that keyboard interaction anymore. I just, okay, Glass, launch conversation, and off it goes, right? The idea is that we can use this in a surgery. We can, the physician can see everything that they're looking at, record it, make that part of a record, use it for training. Another thing, I can take this to my ops guys and say, okay, you guys have all your remote data centers. You guys have somebody there to go flip switches and make sure lights aren't on and stuff like that. If there's a hard drive dead, take it out and put it in. But you know as well as I do that you're still having somebody roll out to there once or twice a week because of some problem. What if you give them Google Glass and you can bring them into a conversation and you can see exactly what they're seeing and walk them through doing what they need to do on the phone so that your guys don't have to leave their house at 2 o'clock in the morning. That's something that we can do with this platform. Now, I just did it just to see if I could do it, right? It wasn't, let's do this. This is, can I do this? And that's one of the things that the lab has been very forthcoming with, or very encouraging, I guess encouraging is us to do that. I could never do this when I was in operations. Getting Google Glass alone, I didn't have the connections. Even if I could get it in, I would have to go through years of security reviews to bring something in like this. I don't have that restriction anymore at the lab. So I know that wearable devices can become part of our teleservices platform with just a little bit of effort.
Yeah.
Now, are the glasses there yet? No, not yet. There's still some problems with them. They'll get there. Other devices are. I'm sure Microsoft, even though they have not announced, has something like this. I wouldn't put it past them. Hint, hint, if they do, we'll test it out.
We're available.
We're available.
But you understand, I spend a little bit of money on something like it. People go, well, they're so expensive. What if he gets that to work? And I deploy that. Oh, my goodness. I mean, that's the stuff that changes healthcare. That's technology. You had a question, ma'am?
Sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we would love to have you out. The only thing we have to do is... there's certain areas that I would love to take you into that we may have to do an NDA. Yeah, because we've done that with several of the healthcare industries. That's just, it's basically, it's not as much for us, but because of some of those partners we have, when our laboratory is actually split into two separate buildings. We actually have a building across the street. Once you go into that other building, it's a wide open partnership, and nobody talks about anything until they walk out the door, they have to stop talking when they go out the door. So, but other than that, yeah, I would love to do that. I have two doctors on each side of mine that would also be involved in that and be able to show you some of the stuff that we've got going on. So, yeah, love to get one of our cards before you go. Other questions?
You know, one of the things that I think is interesting among Intermountain Healthcare is that you asked earlier why we settled on Link. We looked at Tanberg, we looked at Cisco, we looked at VC, we looked at all these other products out on the market. A lot of them are proprietary. I mean, Cisco is an open, they do federation, they do SMP, SIP, and they do XMPP, and they're great on the network, but their usability and their user experience frankly sucks. I mean, Microsoft is a pretty product. I mean, it really is. It's the things that impresses me about the Link is that I don't need training on how to use Link. I can click a button. I know if I double-click a name, I can start chatting. There's a picture of a camera. I can click on it. I don't need that training. It's not the same for Jabber. Jabber is more complex to set up your video cameras and your audio devices. I got a laptop with a video camera. I hook another Logitech camera up to it. It's complex for Jabber to do it. Link, I can click a button and pick my camera, and off I go. I mean, that's why we really settled on Link. And our organization is still running OCS 2007 internally for IAM and Presence. As horrible as that is, we're still running that because we just done IAM and Presence, and that's been great. Link, we're forcing that change. We went out, spun this up in 6 months, and are running two systems independent of each other. I mean, there's federation between the two, but now they've seen the benefits of Link. We've got some of our server admins going through other sessions here in this conference, and they're seeing the extensibility we'll get out with Link. I'm sure within a couple months we'll have Link deployed across the enterprise. We did not go out looking for a UC system when we did this. And I think that's one of the things that we've done differently than most people that you'll see here present. We didn't want UC. That's not what we were looking for. We were looking for a way to deliver healthcare with HD video and HD audio.
So I'll give you, because we're not going to give away the farm. So everything we've showed you, we can show you, but we've got tons more things that and the reason we don't show you is because we've got them all, we don't know if they work yet or not. We're still trying some things out. One of the things I hope you noticed whenever you looked at that screen, now, other than the name of those rooms, because you probably don't know what hospital was what and how those rooms, if you know where the rooms are at, it makes absolute sense to you. But there's two, and here's where all the Microsoft people go, he said it out loud. There's two predominant real operating systems that people are common with. Yeah, there's Android, but the two that people know is Windows and iOS. Pretty much, if you know one of those, you can function kind of in the other, and if you know both of them, you can function in almost everything in the world. So here's the difference between. We grew up in a Windows world. We started coding in a Windows world. We know Windows. That is our work platform. You can walk up to any Windows machine. You can open up Office. You can do whatever you want to, and you can make it work, so you know Windows. Okay? iOS, I'm sorry, that is the most simplistic OS in the world. I can hand that to a 3-year-old kid, and within a few minutes, they're surfing around on it. So what we try to do with our interface, and I keep telling our guys, and I don't mean it derogatory, but make it dumb. You know, dumb it down. It's got to be completely intuitive, because I don't want a clinician having to worry about what they need to click whenever they go up there and see that. So what we try to do in our UI designs is we try to marry a concept between the two of iOS and Windows. It has to have the complexity of a business product that allows for you to operate your business, but it has to come with the simplicity of iOS. And that's why, so those UIs, I'm real picky on those UIs, and we have some two or three major tweaks coming in the next revision. The other thing that I've done is, the way I released the code is we went big bang. Nobody got anything until we went big bang with the first release. And now I get quick releases behind it. Okay, and so these minor revisions come very quickly behind it. And depending on what they are, they can be anywhere from a few months to maybe 90 days or something like that. And what we do is I'm really hardcore about the release. And I hold the business. I hold the business to it. You know, I don't. Everything's time and money. And if you want to bring something else in, it's going to cost you more time and more money. Here's another thing that I did, and I'm just spewing really neat stuff. Here's one of the things that I did that was very different. So I come from both sides. I come from software and hardware. Okay, so I've done both sides. And one of the things you always do is you pad your time, right? You always pad your time. Here was the deal I made with the business. I'm not going to pad my time, but I'm going to be honest with you. And so when I change that time on a daily basis, you're not going to freak out on me. And it was kind of a risky thing that I did, okay? But it brought to the picture honesty. And so we fluctuated up sometimes, and literally almost on a daily basis, we fluctuate the milestones. And I have this awesome project manager that is really good at doing this. So I fluctuate them. What the business does with projecting those time frames, when they first did it, they kind of padded them a little, and now they're honest with the business. So the business knows what they're getting. So when the business says, oh, we've got to have this thing, I try to get them out in little short chunks, but they know whatever that date is, it's an honest date. And that has really, really done a lot for us in winning a lot of converts to some of the development that we've done. So that was a big thing, too.
One of the nice things that what he's done is it's reduced scope creep among this project, right? We know what we're investing our time in. We know how long that's going to take. You come at me with a vague requirement and come at me 3 days before release and say, well, it doesn't meet that requirement. Well, that's what it is. You know, you want this to be that detailed. It's going to be this time. And that's something that has really made this product a success in being forthright and upfront and honest about where we're at. The business has accepted it a lot more than I thought they would. It's been amazing because it really is like that. You know, we say, oh, we'll have it out Q3. Well, what's Q3? That's a 3-month window. No, we say we're going to have it out on March 4th.
Yeah, we give them a date. So my main man, Daryl, back here in the back is giving me we're out of time. I appreciate it. We'll be up here for a few more minutes if you have any questions, anything like that. And then we're somewhere else.
I think we're going to ask the experts till 7, I think.
So there should be some experts around us. If you do that. And if you see them, we'll be there with them, okay?
Lonnie's going to crack jokes.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you very much.